live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. Cofield and Company on Monday. Salerno's in. He's the company. Griffin is here as well. He's company. Busy day on the way. React to a weekend of NBA basketball. Well, one game. Talk about that series. Also, what's coming up tonight in the Stanley Cup playoffs final. In the midst of what right now looks like a ratings disaster, the NBA is down as well. We'll get the numbers later in the day on the NBA. So what are we turning to right out of the gates? We're going to get to some Raiders talk today with Adam Hill. We'll go behind the patch of the 5 o'clock hour. But Raiders have money. And we don't exactly know the philosophy of this new organization with Pete Carroll and John Spytek in terms of big-ticket items. I'm not necessarily a person with my football team that needs the big-ticket items. I think there's ways to spend money without getting big names out there. But there's a big name who's going to be available here, and that's Jair Alexander, defensive back from the Packers. Jalen Ramsey had been rumored to the Raiders for a while. So it seems like a position of need because they don't have obvious starters. I know they like the competition they've got going on right now, but sure. I wonder how the Raiders are going to play this and if they're going to jump in the deep swim pool and spend some big money.
You know, you say big money, but also I think you factor in age. I mean, I know he's only 28. He's kind of an old 28, though. I mean, he's got a lot of wear and tear on the body as far as cornerbacks go. I don't know if giving a guy like that. I mean, because I always think that, like, if there's a reason that the Packers weren't going to give him big money, obviously, they have to think in some way that he's diminished because he's an all-pro type player at one point. So they have to feel like he's diminished in some way, right? Or they're not.
Well, he's been very beat up. He's only played 7 games each of the last 2 seasons.
Right. So, I mean, he's got, again, like a lot of wear and tear on those tires. But I guess we'll have to see how that – because, you know, the Eagles have been rumoring this too, but that seems like not a non-Howie move because of his age and the money he would cost. So I don't know. Like you said – the Raiders' philosophy on this type of thing, not just with the money, but on a player who maybe not in his prime anymore.
Still has money left on a deal.
Yeah.
So that'll be part of the mix here. But I tend to think the Raiders being connected, all these guys are just kind of Raider fans.
Sure.
Trying to be fired up and get big ticket items. I don't.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Well, I mean, if you look up Raiders insiders, it's like fans anyway on Google. So like half the topics come from like just dudes, you know?
And running wild with any kind of rumor that's out there.
Right, you know exactly. I
mean? Anything to get you excited.
You really don't know.
Jeremy Chinn. By the way, mandatory minicamp is upon us all around the NFL, and this was the date, as we had mentioned repeatedly for about 6 weeks in the offseason, that would kind of be the drop dead for Aaron Rodgers, and lo and behold, we'll get to Rodgers and more reaction to that. But Thursday, I think it was Thursday, the story comes out that, you know, Friday is going to be in Pittsburgh getting ready to go. And that was kind of that hard deadline. Like, if you're going to play this year, you got to show up for mandatory minicamp.
Sure.
So Raiders have their minicamp going down here in, it's tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow through Thursday. I know you wanted to talk about the win total later. We will. We're also the division odds.
Yeah.
What vibes do you feel coming out of Raiders camp in terms of real hopes? Because I keep hearing, hey, everything's different. The attitude's different. But
yeah,
as Adam Hill and I have pointed out, we've been around a lot of football regime changes. They say that every time.
Sure.
And oftentimes I want to be like, because I know with UNLV football especially, each year, and it's convenient to do this when there's a coaching change,
right,
and roster changes. And UNLV is going to do it for the third straight year where they're going to have 50 newcomers in, right? So those newcomers can bring good and bad, a new culture. But I often hear in back-to-back years, like, oh, man, everyone's in this year. Everyone's bought in. And I want to be like, but you told me last August this,
yeah,
that everyone – so wait, what happened? I don't go down that path.
Sure.
Because I think they're just saying it to say it. So you don't want to, you know, do gotcha on them.
Right.
But I wonder, the talk coming out of camp, like, I mean, I guess it's sort of believable because last year was – the last 2 years were really weird.
They really were. It's I hesitate to give my prediction or whatever because the last 2 years I've been very optimistic about the team thinking going in. But I really do, and call me crazy, I get kind of sleeper vibes here, man. I feel like they've completely redone the team. So whether it's good or bad, it's a completely different coaching staff, completely different, you know, scouting department, GMs, all this is all different. New quarterback. They get, you know, skill position players. Maybe the best tight end in the league. They blah, blah, blah. you know, running back they just drafted. So, I mean, going into this, I get vibes kind of like, wow, this is a new thing. This is an up-and-coming team. But, again, I thought that the last couple times too. So I try not to, you know, jinx them, I guess. But I really do think they're going to be pretty good.
Well, I think we're safe in saying that the coach, head coach, players, relationship won't be a disaster. And with Josh McDaniels, it was. And I think with Antonio Pierce, it was more on him in terms of the way he handled the head coaching position and his professionalism.
Yeah.
Which then players can look at that and go, like, not buy into it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I hate to say this because I actually like the guy, and I don't mean this as like a total insult, but it was kind of like an amateur hour feel to it versus some of their teams or the organizations feel like they're, you know, running on all cylinders and just like, I don't know. I feel like this is different, man. We got, you know, veterans in there who know what they're doing. We've got, again, veteran players that know what they're doing. I think the team has a different feel. I haven't felt this way since like that end of the season when Bisacci took over and they were actually going there. And the next season you're like, okay, well, maybe they'll build on this. And then I haven't felt that way since then, but now I kind of do. I feel like they're going to be pretty good.
So you didn't say anything with the 12-1 on the division.
Yeah, well, you said you're going to bring it up later. I think that's kind of silly. I don't know. I thought it was kind of crazy.
What, that it's too long?
I think 12-1. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to win the division, but you give me 12-1, I'll take that.
All right, did you take it already?
No.
Are you going to?
Probably.
Okay.
I mean, there's only four teams in the division. 12-1. Come on, man. I know the Chiefs are good, but the rest of those teams, you know.
There's an unknown. Well, I actually think there's less unknowns with the Broncos and the Chargers than with the Raiders.
I think the Chargers have the most unknowns because I'm waiting for Herbert to do something, first of all. I know everybody keeps telling me how great – I was on the Herbert wagon too, but they're just like, you know, this guy's amazing, blah, blah.
So I mean, do something is winning the playoffs.
Yeah, he's got to win something.
But that has nothing to do with the division title.
Well, no, but I'm saying he didn't win the division title last year. No. I mean, they weren't even close. I don't think – the Chargers, to me, had the most question marks because every year everybody picks them and then they don't do anything. The Broncos, I think, are heading in the right direction. I like Knicks a lot. Obviously, they, you know, ended the season very strong. And then you got the Chiefs. But, I mean, 12-1, I don't know.
Well, I mean, look at the division. I mean, I would argue that the team with the most question marks right now is the one that just went to its third straight Super Bowl. You're coming off three straight years of long seasons, long wear and tear. They lost offensive linemen. They're not coming in as the big dominant Chiefs this year. So I think the division's as wide open as it's been in a long time.
Yeah, you can make that case too.
Wide open?
Wide open in the sense that the other two teams, the Chargers, they have an established quarterback. They have an established head coach. The Broncos have an established head coach. They have a quarterback coming off a pretty decent rookie season. So, I mean, there's positives and negatives for each team. But, again, you look at this division, it's kind of what are we about to expect? What can we expect from this division, especially when the Chiefs aren't going to automatically be dominating?
I'd say the division's ajar.
It's a big change from a year ago, though.
I mean, it is.
You're expecting the Chiefs to come back to the pack? Besides the questions of personnel-wise, what, because they won a lot of close games last year?
They're always going to be competitive. They're always going to be the Chiefs, but I just don't think they weren't.
It's not like the Chiefs where they eked by in the division. Now, they eked by in a lot of games, but they won all their close games. They went 15-2.
I know.
I think sometimes our last memory, you know, of the Super Bowl is like, what a disaster. The Eagles were just really good, and the Chiefs ran into a freaking buzzsaw. I don't think that would happen. You know, whatever. You play the proverbial 100 times. I don't think the Eagles are ripping the hell out of them.
No, 99 times maybe, but not 100.
I don't think that's the case either. But, yeah, Chargers last year were 11-6. You could argue in some areas they got better. I still don't trust the Broncos because I still don't trust Bo Nix. I want to see a quarterback in the league for 2 or 3 years, playing at a high level, getting better each year. I had a Broncos fan walk up to me at TI on Friday, and he was like, you should talk about the Broncos more. And I'm like, let me talk about the Broncos. Just not today. You're also in Las Vegas. It's becoming a Raiders town. So
yeah. If we have Jay on from the Westgate, we'll talk Broncos.
Get out of here. But he said he was saying he loved Bo Nix. He wouldn't trade him for anyone. And then he threw out the cliche, loves leadership. I mean, there's a lot of good quarterbacks out there with great leadership qualities. We'll see what Bo Nix is.
Yeah, I think Sean Payton is why I'd be more confident in the Broncos than Bo Nix. I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, you give him a young quarterback who looks promising. I don't think that Bo Nix is going to have a bad season because I don't think, you know, Payton will let him. But yeah, I mean, like as Griffin said, I don't think it's out of the question that the Raiders could win.
I think it's out of the question.
You do, really?
I think it's a long. I think it's a long shot. I think the Raiders have to improve from a team last year that was a, you know, one of the seven worst teams in the NFL to get to what to win the division. A minimum 11 wins. I mean, this is a four-win team a year ago, and you're right. They've turned over a lot, and the coaching staff is a lot better. And hopefully the quarterback position is very improved. Also, another hope is that Ashton Jeanty is worth a number six pick, and he's going to pile up, I don't know, 1,500 yards from scrimmage and at least 10 touchdowns.
Right. Well, let me ask you this.
There's hope. There's at least hope. You went into last year, and you're like, this roster looks kind of spotty.
Yeah. This year, I don't feel that way at all. But when you talk about the Chiefs, though, I mean, you can look at it two ways, I guess, with the Chiefs, because I think what Griffin is saying and how they kind of look like they came back to the pack even though they were 15 wins is because they weren't winning games the way they used to. They're used to seeing Andy Reid teams and Patrick Mahomes teams put up a lot of points. They're really winning with defense. So do you think they can continue that for another season? I mean, maybe next year they don't win those close games.
Winning with defense? Yeah. I mean, I think they retooled their team that way. I think they'll be better on offense. I think the more they phase out Kelce, unless he comes in shape this year.
Well, they said he is.
That's a good thing.
Right.
And they made some decisions with the offensive line. And in the end, I mean, it's lame NFL analysis, but they have the guy. Yeah. And anyone who wants to sit here and pitch me that, you know, he's not top five, if not number one, in a big spot as a quarterback.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's a tough argument to make. Sure. Like, I think Josh Allen's awesome. I still have my reservations at times about Lamar.
Yeah.
I don't trust the Bengals. If we're just talking about AFC, I don't trust the Bengals to play good defense. And the organization's not handling the offseason very well.
Poor Joe Burrow, man.
Now, the Steelers, we'll get to the Steelers.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm the highest on the show.
Really?
On the Rodgers signing. So we'll get to that. On the way back, though, man, what a bad news dump, right? It was late on a Friday, I think it was. I don't know. I don't remember when it was, but I know it was over the weekend. The settlement or the judgment on the settlement, the house settlement, finally came in from Judge Wilkin. This is supposed to be like, hey, college sports is going to be fixed. But as we've told you a million times, this just sets parameters for a bunch of new problems. And I want to talk on the way back about unintended consequences. And I'm telling you, people are going to be blown away and be like, they're going to look up in 2 years and go, oh, my God, we're actually doing this to the kids?
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
So, Salerno, I know you're not the biggest college sports fan, but you realize the enormity of this new system they set up where schools will now be giving money to the players.
Yep.
There's still monies outside of that through what's supposed to be true NIL that players can make. That will have a clearinghouse. Any deals over $600 need to be approved by a national clearinghouse, which I think is going to be really interesting. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, the days of, hey, here's a $10,000 handshake, or we're going to say you work at the country club during the summer, but you do nothing.
Yeah. No-show jobs. The mob has those.
In theory, the no-show jobs should be obsolete. I would think that random references to, well, they're a brand ambassador, you're going to see us on their social media. Like, well, we better see you on their social media.
Right.
It's not that hard to do all this stuff.
Yeah.
And but I have no idea what the clearinghouse, like, if you're like, hey, at Alabama, a football player pimping the local car dealership, you know, every IG post is worth
$900,000.
I don't know how they're going to keep it from that. Or
rich sign spinners.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
It's going to be crazy. So anyway, the school stuff itself, each school will have a cap, which right away I'm like, caps make me uncomfortable.
I thought of you right away when I saw
this. That's, you know, salary restrictions, essentially. Now, if there is an NIL element, a true NIL element, you know, for the – because think about it. At, like, LSU, there are so many athletes, or there were, so many athletes who could be making big NIL money, like gymnasts or softball players.
Sure.
And this 20.5, the first thing off the top is – how will each school's athletic department figure out who gets the money? And I don't mean the players, the athletes. I mean which sport. You don't think at certain schools? Wow. You're like, hey, where's the freaking money? And then there's the lower sports. Where are they going to get anything? We know Title IX lawsuits are coming here, but for the Olympic sports, what do they get? I think a lot of this stuff is going to be public, which I want to get to. But you found an AP story that had some cross-country athletes doing what?
Me?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Athletes crying because they aren't good enough to get paid. That was your headline.
I was reading the wrong thing. I suck. This is my thing. And the first thing I thought of when I heard of the cap was you, because we're going to run into this situation where, you know how like now we have a salary cap in baseball, but the we have revenue sharing, whatever. But the Rockies, their excuse is they don't want to, you know, use the money. They don't want to pay. They don't have the money. So now we're going to have all these schools who are ripping people, either ripping students off, or you're going to have students crying because they're not good enough to make the money. I mean, you know, if nobody's watching your sport, it's not generating any money. Guess what? You're not going to get the money.
That's an interesting thought. So, Griffin, come in on this conversation. You were at Utah. You went to Cal Poly. You played football. So you were on the biggest revenue sport in theory. I don't know about Cal Poly, but you get my point. Do you want to listen to the cross country, the track, the softball, the crew? Do you want to listen to those athletes talk about monies?
Yeah, I want to hear it. But at the end of the day, it is what it is. Football is a earner. It's a big earner at most establishments. You look at Cal Poly, right? Even a school, a small D1 FCS school like Cal Poly, it just got out a couple months ago, I believe. They had to cut their swim team. There's teams that had to get cut. And it's like, it sucks. It really does for those athletes and for those teams. But at the end of the day, that's just the structure of college sports. Football is the big earner. Basketball is an earner.
You call that crying. You don't feel bad for
it? He's crying. Well, you know, it kind of reminds me of like the WNBA that we have the argument where it's like, well, they deserve to be paid more. Okay, deserve is a weird word, because how do you deserve something if you don't make any, if you're not making any money?
But to me, WNBA is different than the Olympic
sport
at universities. State-run institutions, I do think they serve a role in having lots of athletic programs and allowing the high school graduates who excelled in sports that might not be football a place to compete.
But it's like,
it doesn't all have to be about money. Listen, I'm realistic here. I know football brings in the lion's share of the money. I will counter with, though, as this happens, there will be good journalism done, and I hope it's done at the school level, where this notion of, like, football drives the bus. Does it? At some places, is it driving the bus, or is it driving the bus over into a friggin' ravine? Because football is not a moneymaker in lots of places. And this is going to be something I reference a bunch. Justin Watkins turned me on to this one, and it's from who the hell did it? I think Front Office Sports did it. They've done it the last couple years. You know, it's not really a hidden fee anymore. There, for each student at a school, each undergrad, there's a whole litany of fees. And one of the newest things that's on their list that they pay are athletic fees, right? And some schools, like, if you're at Texas, yeah, it's like $10. Right. If you're at a have not that wants to be a have, you're spending good money after bad. Like at San Diego State, they're spending money. UNLV, they're spending money. And you're trying to play that catch-up game because you're like, we're investing now so that we can be there in 5 years. Like, we have to keep up with the Joneses. So a lot of times you're losing money, and students are actually paying crazy athletic fees. Like, San Diego State students are paying like $22.50 a year for athletic fees. Like I said, Texas Tech might be $12.
Right.
I have the 2023 numbers in front of me, and they break it down. Like, per student, these are the fees that they're charged for athletics. Here's some of the unintended consequences that are going to come. First of all, when the $20.5 million is now being brought in-house, and every school's not going to spend that, but at state schools, I believe that is of public record. Now, they may not give out a sheet like, here's the payroll for the football team.
Right.
But we can get access to that sheet. We can grant it. Or we can make a request and have those lists given to us. When lists come out that actually have the hard numbers, like, it's one thing talking about the Miami quarterback, Carson Beck. Oh, I got $4 million. We don't know that exactly. That's rumor mill stuff. Now, at state institutions, we'll be able to get the list. So this, in essence, will be like a payroll.
Yeah.
So think about people who are covering it. Students, college football content creators, you don't think they're going to comb through a list and go, this running back's is not getting any carries here. They gave him $700,000, or, oh, that guy fumbled. Is that worth the $1.1 million he's getting? Like, that stuff, like, we're going to start treating college players, college athletes, like professional athletes. I'm just saying, the unintended consequences of that are people are going to have those lists, and then on campus, if I were a student, if I'm an athlete who's not getting any money, and say I'm the best person, I don't know, if I'm the best person on a women's basketball team and I'm getting a pittance of like what the quarterback gets. I mean, if I want to be a jerk, I'd be like, eh, quarterback's kind of in a slump here. Seven interceptions last three games. I get this. This person gets $2.9 million. I know you're just throwing up your hands. You're like, that's the way it is. Well, I just hope people realize that's what's coming. And I find it interesting. But there's going to be a lot of ways to weaponize it and get after kids who either aren't playing well or are backups. There's going to be lists every week of like, because you see it. There's a list every year. NBA, Major League Baseball, especially the guaranteed contract sports, like top 10 worst contracts.
Right.
There's going to be lists like that for college students, for college athletes.
That's fine. You can pay me $700,000 for nothing, and I'll say, yeah, that's the worst contract ever. Whatever.
I don't believe you that would be fine.
I'll be in the penthouse over at the Palace Station. Thanks.
It's just gonna enable a lot more of these, like Tyrese Haliburton, who's the most overrated player going into this season, that we could see that in college sports. And then, like you were saying, Steve, like everyone will be able to get access to that, make requests for that information. College sports is at the end of the day, it's a college campus. College kids are active. College kids want to be involved with the issues and try and fix them.
Let me give you a good example. Uh-huh. And I found the coverage of this fascinating. The lady who's pitching for Texas Tech, right? She got $1 million out of the collective for Texas Tech. She got destroyed over the weekend. She lasted one inning. It was like five hits, four runs. It was real interesting. When I looked at the coverage, I could not find where her pitching line was. Yeah. Oftentimes it was buried like seven graphs in.
That's funny.
For the women especially.
Okay.
Is that because we see the way Angel Reese is treated, uh-huh. right? For the women especially, who I think most people are a little bit easier on female athletes in terms of like when they fail,
yeah.
we don't call it choking. But what she did that could be labeled a choke, the way it was labeled was, exhaustion, too much wear and tear. She pitched too often. She's making $1 million. There ain't pitching too often in the world of $1 million, is there? Now, I'm saying that to be over-the-top jabroni.
Yeah.
But are people ready for, yay, a week before the Texas Tech pitcher? Oh, this is great. Women should get that kind of money. Good for you, softball. She sucks, and then there's an avalanche of choker. You stink. You don't deserve the money. Get ready.
Well, I wouldn't care if somebody's paying me. They can say whatever they want. But
that's you.
I know. I understand.
You're not a 20-year-old woman.
You don't know that.
Right. The change could be coming at any moment. You're not a 22-year-old quarterback who, I don't know, a good example, and I know I keep talking. The good example is I think it broke DJU.
Uh-huh.
Ui Unga Lele. I think all the pressure broke him. He just had nothing left at the end. His final stop was, Florida State, and he was done.
I mean, it's possible. Yankees sign guys and they crumble under the pressure of New York. I mean, it happens. But my thing is, we're looking at it the wrong way. It shouldn't be, how did she perform in the game? It should be, with the stands full and was in an empty stadium when the guy was throwing a discus? Because you're not making any money. I'm sorry. I understand, it's a very, again, I'm using a childish way of looking at things, I think, to think like, oh, I had a good game. I deserve money. Great. How many people bought tickets to watch you run 100 yards? I mean, that's just the way the world works.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We'll build on that college athlete thing now that we're going to, a lot of places know what they're actually making. It's going to be a whole different world for college athletes. Like, you want the money, you're going to have adult responsibilities. And people are mean. We see what it's like in the WNBA. We're going to talk a little in a couple of spots today. The Fever and the Sky. And the Sky are terrible. And Angel Reese just seems to be... either if you're nice, you can say she's stuck in place in terms of her progress, or she's going backwards. And people, hey, you want the attention.
Yeah.
People are mean, and it's one of those things we've talked for years about, the GOAT argument. LeBron James has gone through it like no other athlete in the history of sports, and people don't process that, what that would have done or could have done to former great athletes.
Oh, I know. Because
they didn't deal with this in the 50s or 60s.
Nope.
I mean, African-American athletes dealt with in the 50s and 60s, lots of stuff into the 70s. But in terms of the pressure, because media pressure back then was just the media. Now it just comes from you 24 hours a day from every angle.
It's funny because I know I'm way late to the party, but I just started watching that Winning Time over the weekend for the first time. I don't know how I never got to it, but mm-hmm. I just did. And you're right. It's like you see what – I mean, I know it's a fictional show, but you kind of see what goes on behind the scenes or what mm-hmm. you think goes on behind the scenes. If any of that stuff was going on now, it would be all over social media. Everybody yep. would know about it. There would be some, you know, ladies saying this happened, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
You have to be cleaner now.
Yeah. Of course.
Like you can't hide freaking skeletons in the closet.
You have to be
womanizing.
Spotless. I mean
– Yep. Have they gotten anything on the announcer, Chick Hearn?
You mean on the show yet?
Yeah.
No, I haven't gotten
it
yet.
Wait until you see the way they portray him.
Okay.
And what his image would have been had it been now.
Sure.
Because, like, announcers are news.
That's like, dude, Bob Uecker. I remember Artie Lang used to have this story about Bob Uecker, about, like, how he always thought he was, like, this clean-cut, whatever guy. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into the booth with him for hangs out. They let him and Norm hang out there for a little bit. And it was like, bleep, 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 bleep. Look at this bleeping guy. Bleep, bleep. You know, it was just the funniest. He has a way better impression. And, of course, I can't say the words on here. But, yeah, you would never know.
And now we do.
Now we do.
Yes, we're finding out a lot more. We've got a big charity softball game going down. They're back. Raiders and Golden Knights going at it. Saturday, July 12th, Las Vegas Ballpark. We've got tickets, two of them at 364-1100. Caller 7-364-1100. You can grab your tickets at battleforvegas.com. It's the Raiders and the Golden Knights going at it. July 12th, a Saturday night. It's a big charity event. Tickets right now, two of them, 364-1100.
Steve Kim, the host of the Three Knockdown Rule, joins Cofield and Company, presented by Snack Nutrition.
All right, let's bring in our buddy Steve Kim. Salerno's here. It's Cofield. What's up, Steve?
Afternoon, gentlemen.
What is L.A. like right now?
I'm driving certain areas. It's interesting. If you don't drive... It's actually okay. It's not like the whole city's on fire. It may seem that way to outsiders, but, you know, I'm driving to the studio to do the Three Knockdown Rule, and here's my office here in East L.A. I've consciously avoided certain freeways, you know, which ones, and it's honestly, it's just like business as usual to most people, believe it or not.
Yeah, it's weird. Is it like kind of annoying when you see people pull? Because I've seen a lot of videos that like aren't from now; they're from like a few years ago, and it makes it look like L.A. like the entire city's on fire and stuff. Is it like, come on, man, like enough of this crap already? Or
yeah, you're right. I mean, look, when you have any type of uprising or situation, protest, whatever you want to call it, there's going to be a thousand different vantage points, especially now with social media.
Yeah,
everyone in essence can be their own news outlet and record things and put them up. But the reality is a lot of these things, the radius is only a couple of miles. I mean, I certainly would not compare this. And again, I'm not talking about the property damage or the financial loss. I would not compare this at all to anything like, let's say, 1992, the riots that happened after the Rodney King verdict.
Right.
I remember that. That's a long time ago. We were all a lot younger.
Yeah.
It being a lot more dangerous throughout more areas than it is this past weekend. Now, again, let's hope that what we saw was the worst on Sunday. But I'll be honest, again, my particular Monday has been business as usual.
What would you say as you've been there your whole life, right, in L.A.?
Yes, I have. Okay. I'm a lifelong native of Southern California.
So what do you say to a guy like Tommy Tuberville who said California is like a third world country, or L.A. is?
Yeah. You know, Tommy says a lot of things, you know, again, that just shows me, number one, he may have not spent a lot of time in California. And number two, he's probably never been to really a third world country, yeah. You know. So, I mean, those two things can be true. And right. Tommy's a former University of Miami football coach, but I think that there's a little bit of hyperbole there with coach/Senator Tuberville.
Yeah, Tuberville said, L.A. looks like a third world country. Anarchists are in charge. Law enforcement's being attacked. The rule of law is non-existent. Newsom couldn't resist, went back at him, and made a comment about the murder rate in Alabama. So this is what we get from our public servants now. It's a lot of fun. Lighten things up a little bit. I'm seeing Miami, just like, you know, every other program in the country. These are big times right now with official visits. And that was quite a picture of their potential offensive line commits. I don't think all those guys are committed. I know a couple were, but that was pretty impressive. I saw you retweet that picture.
Yeah, I mean, look, with Mario Cristobal, you could say a lot about him. I know there's critics of him about his game and clock management. But I will say this, just the last 3 years that he's been here, the body types that he's bringing in, because he's big on measurables, the days of the midsize tweener at certain positions, over. The Miami will always look good coming off the team bus and at the airport, just physically. They got the number one.
Go ahead, keep going. Sorry.
Yeah, and guys like Jackson Cantwell, who is the number one recruit in the country, who's about 6'7". Look, Miami will always look good, if not play good.
Yeah, I was going to mention him, 6'8", 317, and then a guy who essentially they were almost setting up the offensive line. Like, the right tackle's already committed from Fort Myers, Florida. He's like 6'5", 285, you know, coming out of high school in a year. What do you think? Greg and I were just talking about the new cap and the way they're going to try to split monies at schools. How many other sports at Miami will actually get part of, if they max out the $20.5 million, what other sports will get some money? Or could that be a rare case where football is getting like freaking 85% of the money?
Well, isn't the money going to be already allocated by sport in terms of revenue-sharing sports, revenue-generating sports, basketball? Because I know basketball. Miami has a new coach. His name is Jay Lucas. He came from Duke. And trust me, he has money to work with. I heard that was part of his deal.
All right.
Coach Larinaga did a great job at Miami, but he was simply a guy that did not want to deal with the whole NIL, the whole dynamic of the transfer portal. And Jay Lucas is a young go-getter who has remade the roster in just several months. And at least on paper, that team looks to be a lot better. But regardless of what takes place, Miami will always put an emphasis on football, or at least they will finally, after about 20 years of falling behind in the arms race. And Miami has a strong collective. I know some of the people that are in charge of it and are greatly involved in it. They're going to try to be a player. They're going to try to be relevant again. I'm not worried about the Miami Athletic Department. I'm certainly not worried about football because, to me, they will always be known as a signature football school. That is the brand identity of that university.
Talking to Steve Kim, holding it down out there in Los Angeles. You talk about relevance, and I think, are we reaching kind of like a teetering point here with the Angel Reese stuff? I know that she's been attached to Caitlin Clark, but Caitlin Clark now being out, and it just doesn't look like she, I mean, either she peaked and is getting worse, or she never was really that good, whatever it is. Are we getting to a point now where she's going to become kind of irrelevant soon?
Well, I don't know if she's going to become irrelevant. She's certainly become a bit of a punchline.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that there's a new basketball term called knee bounds is hilarious. Knee bounds. Not rebound. Knee bounds. Because it's all about her, right?
Yeah.
So once you become a punchline, because I've said this for a while, the actual rivalry between those two had nothing to do with basketball skill. Because one player that much better, more effective, and until Angel Reese realizes that she's a really famous role player, okay? She's a role player. And I said this today on Fearless. At that level, for a team to be really good, a player of her style and skill has to be about the fourth or fifth best player on the floor who has to sacrifice their game for others, okay? Caitlin Clark is a type of player that can make other players better. Angel Reese has to have the wherewithal to realize my job is to sacrifice for others, much like the way Dennis Rodman did, right? I don't know if she has that self-awareness to ever make that happen completely.
Steve Kim is with us. You mentioned talking about it on Fearless. I saw that Whitlock was like, how does she get out of this, basically? Like, she's become a joke. She's a laughingstock online. How does she get out of it? I'm not sure she does. I mean, she's not going to be through basketball, so I don't know what she's going to do. I don't know how she changes her image because there are lots of people lined up against her, but I especially think males. There's a lot of dudes who are lined up against her, and they just, I mean, just put out videos or missing shots, and it's like, yeah, I'm getting thousands of views. I'm getting thousands of comments. This is what I need, so screw Angel Reese.
Right, look, I'm not going to begrudge those guys. If you are a content creator or you're a network, you're in this for clicks and views. Okay, that's your job. Yeah. Just like our job is to have the biggest audience possible and keep them entertained. She's a polarizing figure. But, guys, this is where she remains someone that's very polarizing, and it doesn't help her. I'm sure you guys saw the video of her shaking her backside along with Sexy Red, right?
Yes.
That right there goes along with the self-awareness. That stuff right there feeds the fire. It does. It does not help her cause. It really doesn't because some of her own past statements have been, I've been sexualized. Really, by who? And when you do things of that nature, given the history, right, and what she has said out of her own mouth, those are the things that create constant cannon fodder against her.
Steve Kim is with us. Last thing on Reese that I thought was a little disturbing before the weekend, and disturbing as someone who likes basketball, has a respect for the game, has a respect for trying to improve, is, and they were showing some of the videos when you were on this morning on Fearless, she's working drills with like a 6'5 guy behind her with like a, you know, a giant pad, like kind of a wand, and then someone else will be in front of her in the post. And to me, they're just reinforcing the bad habits. She doesn't jump when she goes up to try to make layups. And there's a guy up there, he's got this long wand to get himself to like 7 feet tall, and he's not even trying to block her. I mean, you don't want to shame someone, but to send the message that like you can't keep trying the same sort of basketball moves by not jumping and leaning into a 6'6 woman, she needs to be rejected every time she tries in practice. And that's self-awareness, like, crap, this isn't working, I got to do something else. But it's almost like they're giving her a soft touch, and by doing that, they're screwing her over.
Yeah, and then if you ever see her try to shoot perimeter shots, she literally shoots from the hip.
Yeah, it's bad.
Okay, and I don't mean she's outspoken. She shoots from the hip. Sure. She will never consistently get that shot off.
Well, if she's shooting like that in practice, which she is, if that is not corrected, you're just reinforcing bad habits and you're enabling her.
You practice the way you play, and you play the way you practice. And I just don't think she ever is going to have a real touch. She's not. And if her game was predicated upon battling inside the paint, grabbing a rebound, and then outletting the ball or resetting the ball back outside to the guard, I think her game would be much more effective and efficient for the team. I've seen clips where her teammates are just kind of stuck outside wide open at the three-point line watching her flail away, bending rims with their shots, and they're pretty frustrated. You could just read that body language.
So we had an athlete achieve at a super high level in Coco Gauff, wins the French Open. I think you and I are going to disagree on this one. She said she's proud to be an American, so she was enjoying American flags being waved there, but she said she was also proud to rep people who look like me. What was your reaction on that?
Yeah, I think, look, if she just would have left it, hey, I just love America, we have to be fair about this.
Yeah,
there would have been a part of a constituency that would have been very bitter at her. Like, what do you mean? When was America great for us? It's just there's a certain bitterness and a certain group of malcontents that want you to have the oppression that they feel. And this is where I do feel bad for Coco, in the sense that you have to have a form or at least a little bit of survivor's guilt, or they're going to not be happy with you. So I almost feel as though she's doing this out of duty. I don't believe what she said was anti-American. I almost feel like it's her way of paying penance and, okay, hey, guys, this is one of the greatest moments of my life, but I'm almost as miserable as you are. There, I said it. You happy? That's the way I took it.
That could be. I also looked at the comments, which kept stopping short of saying what she wanted to say, I think. And maybe the reason is she's just doing it because she feels like she has to do it. But I thought she had more to say, and I almost felt bad for her that she was afraid to say what she wanted to say. And she actually had a receptive audience, because there was a moment where she said, hey, there's a lot going on right now in the U.S. She paused for a second, and the French media, and I'm sure mostly European media, was like cracking up. Like, you're in a comfy spot. Now, when you come back, you might get a rash of crap, but you're in a comfy spot. And even in that spot, she was still kind of afraid to explain what she was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Look, the nation spoke out. We had a election. The nation spoke. People voted. She had a vote. She could have spoke out. No matter how imperfect this current administration would be, I always just think back and I say these two words, Kamala Harris, and I thank God we don't have her as president. There, I said what I said, and she's allowed to say what she says. That's the freedom of speech that we love about America. God bless this great country, huh? Right, fellas?
Steve Kim is with us.
Yes, absolutely. Moving to boxing for a second, I want you to tell me, Steve, why I shouldn't be sad about this, because Manny Pacquiao going to be in the main event with Berrios. Now, I'm not sad that they're fighting. I think it's great. I love main events in boxing. But, like, I'm thinking back to the days of, you know, a young Pernell Whitaker fighting Golden Boy or something. You get your friends together, watch these guys in their prime. And now all we got's a 46-year-old Manny Pacquiao. I mean, does this show something about boxing, or is it just because it's Manny?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it is Manny, but yeah, you're right. I mean, this is how farcical it is.
Yeah.
Manny Pacquiao was literally inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame yesterday.
Right.
Just think of it. That's not a punchline. That's not a joke. Just a couple of months or maybe 6 weeks after being inducted into the International Boxing Hall of Fame, he will also be headlining a pay-per-view at age 46. I don't need a punchline. It writes itself.
That's not the only fight on that card, right? Is there another good fight on the card?
No, there's a full card. It's not a bad card, by the way. Okay. Tim Zhu has a rematch with Fundura. I think
that's a good fight.
Cruz is in that fight. But let's be honest. Like we found out this week in Norfolk, it really is about the main event. The main event is 90% of every card.
Yeah. On a three knockdown rule, do you talk to Barrios?
Well, I actually, when I was in Vegas last week, I was able to visit him at the gym, and I got about a 7.5 million interview with him. Very good guy, very solid individual. I think he's ready to fight and try to win. I don't think he'll be awed by the situation. So it's part of our YouTube channel, but it's not necessarily part of the show. The show this week with Mario and I, we actually just spoke about what took place in Norfolk, that big snafu.
Steve Kim 323 up on Twitter. You're also doing shorts, by the way, aren't you? You're doing like quick hits. I like the shorts that you're doing.
Yeah, they're called quick jabs, and basically sometimes news will break that me and Mario cannot get to, or there's something that I want to expound upon a little bit more. Let me give you an example, like the passing of one of the all-time great fighters of his era, one of my personal favorites, the body snatcher, Mike McCallum. I felt as though just me and Mario talking about it for 30 seconds would not do him justice. It would not pay proper homage to a guy that's truly a great Hall of Fame type of fighter. And anytime I want to do a quick commentary on something that comes up that we didn't cover, I'll just go out there due to the wizardry of modern technology, set up my phone, pontificate for 3 minutes, and then we have content.
Last one, I got like 40 seconds left. We've hit on this before, but it looks like it's official now. I think we keep getting information on this. Is Dana White going to be the promoter on the September 13th boxing match?
Yes, I've been told that. I have pretty good sources that I cannot reveal, but that's always been the case.
Okay.
And people like to dredge up the fact that Dana White and Turki Alashik have gone Donald Trump and Elon Musk. I don't think they're at that point yet.
All right. And that night is actually, there's a fight night that night, so I guess he can be away from UFC as that one's going down in San Antonio, Texas. All right, Steve. Everyone out there, check out Steve Kim 323 up on Twitter. And like you said, with the quick jabs, a lot more good stuff coming in terms of content. Thank you, my friend.
Thanks.
So Steve doing his victory lap there, talking about the election.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone is free, like I said, with Coco Gauff. Like, you say what you want to say. I don't know why she was, like, hesitating. And, like, if you're going to... Because here's what happens. When you say even the little she said, she's still getting attacked. So at least be full-throated in what you want to say. If you want to say something about whatever's going on in the United States, don't be afraid to do it abroad or here.